Here is one of a series of talks by spiritual leader Lola McDowell Lee, spanning two decades from the early 70s through the 90s. Lola was a Zen Roshi, whose Rinzai lineage included Dr. Henry Plutov and renowned Zen master Shigetsu Sasaki. Lola was a religious scholar as well as an ordained Christian minister. While the talks are focused mainly on Zen and Buddhism, Lola drew on many spiritual traditions, including those of Jesus, Plato, Lao Tzu, the Hindu Vedas, Meister Eckhart, and Gurdjieff.
Okay, now we are still on this. I hope you're sort of enjoying these Lao Tzu Tao Te Ching thing. There's a lot of it. We're still with it. We're only on chapter 17. I think there's 52. Anyway, so of great rulers, the subjects do not notice the existence. To lesser ones, people are attached, and they praise them. Still lesser ones, people fear, and the meanest ones, people despise. For it is said, if your faith be insufficient, verily you will receive no faith. How reluctantly they, that is the great rulers, how reluctantly they consider their words. Merit they accomplish, deeds they performed, and the 100 families thought, we are independent. Yeah. Oh, he's so clever with these words. It has been said over and over that the a form of religion, you know, kind of that sits in the cellar, a form of religion is consolation. We console ourselves. While the best form of religion is kind of like a music between the individual and the universe, or the law, the eternal law. So there's a singing and a dancing that goes on. See, because, the best form, having found one's place, one's position, as it were, or whatever, you know, in the universe, then this religion becomes this reciprocal music and dance. But in some people, there is this struggle between the person, they sometimes call individual, the person and the universe. There's a struggle between, you know, there's all kinds of misunderstandings. I don't understand this universe, they say. And so that in this struggle, sometimes there is the defeat of the person, the individual. You know, he says, I never will know. I can't know, you know. And then comes the consolation. He consoles himself. I can't know. And there are some who reach this place, rather than consoling themselves, they begin to seek. You know, out of this defeat between themselves and the universe, they begin to look. So whatever your stance, whether it's this a true form of consolation or a really seeking, it depends upon the condition of the person. And so that we can ask, does he want to understand really, actually, you know, or does he just prefer to somehow bandage his wounds that he got in this struggle, in this defeat, in some kind of a consolation. It depends, you know. Well, it depends on what the person is satisfied with. Now, how he can use his mind. What kind of understanding he's been able to conjure up through this universe. Yeah. And it is true that a great many people live in consolation, even though they do not know it as consolation. But they think, you know, they're pretty right. You know, it's a kind of they look at it as a kind of a righteousness. It's almost as if they say to themselves, well, I don't really know what is going on here. You know, I have these emotions. I don't know where they came from. And I have these thoughts. And I don't know where they came from. And I don't know what to do with them. And I don't really know what's going on out there. You put a seed in the ground, it comes up and it's a tree. How, you know, what do I know about that? I don't know anything. It's a big mystery. And they further go on to say, I have no way of finding out. So I will abide by whatever, you know, whatever the minister or the priest or the sect leader or the cheerleader or whatever, you know, whoever and whatever. Whatever they say, I'm going to say, I believe. Yeah. Because it's easy. I don't have to worry. And if they say, these lovely people say, that if a certain kind of emotion comes over me, and then in my heart I am reborn, I'm going to say, okay, I will believe this, because I believe what has been told to me. Howdy doody, folks. See, and now I have no need to go searching. I have no need to go questing. Somebody's already done it. And I will just believe what they say. And I don't have to do any of this stuff, you know. After all, God is so far away. He is so distant, you know. And he is, I've been told, he is so majestic and so all-powerful and therefore overpowering. And I could never approach him with my questions. So evidently somebody else has, and they have the answers, and so I will believe the answers that they give me. It's this kind of thinking that, and a lot of people do, you know. I mean, very highly placed businessmen who you think are really sharp, that's what they say, you know. My priest will take care of that for me. I pay him. I've heard him say it. I don't have to worry. And so, and as I say, it's this kind of thinking that led Karl Marx in his book, you know, to say religion is the sigh of the sufferer and the opium of the masses. It's nice. It's, you don't very rarely hear that. Very rarely hear that, the sigh of the sufferer. I think that's nice. See, we're satisfied with that. We ask somebody the questions and they tell us what they think. And good. So then I have no need to ask, what is this image of God in which I have been created? You know, it says in the Bible that I am created in the image of God. And so I ask you, what is this image? We are all in the same boat. We are all created in the image of God. What is this image? Here I am walking around every day, and somehow inside of me I'm carrying this image. Surely, somehow, I should be able to see it, or hear it, or feel it, or taste it, or something. Well, what did mankind do? He turned it all around and created God in his image. Yeah. So he became a big man sitting up there. What is this image? In which you are created. What is it? What is this that you are hiding in yourself? And we're back to the little squib in the bulletin. You know not what. You must increase it. You know not how. You must give it back, and you know not when. This fantastic gift of life, what are you doing with it? Then we hear many, 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 many times, we hear it said, well, whatever happens, happens for the best. Is this true? Is this, however the situation ended or finished or whatever happened, you know, was it really the best for all concerned? And if so, out of what do you have this judgment that it is the best? Or are you now again with a consolation? It's for the best. I didn't win, but it's for the best. I didn't get a good grade, but it's for the best. You know, I didn't have the best figure in the world, but it's for the best. My hair's turning gray, but it's for the best. You know, really, see? It's like the fox in Aesop's fable, you know. The grapes are sour because I can't reach them. I don't have them, so they're sour. And this is the way the situation ended, so it's for the best. And I learned a lesson. Did you really? Well, now, Lao Tzu says this, you know. Whatever happens is the right thing to happen. He says it. And he has not got the slightest little glimmer of consolation in his mind. Not one little iota, no. It is his point of view. And then we look at his state of consciousness. It is his point of view. He is not involved in it. He is not attached to it. There is a happening, and there is a witness to the happening. And to such a one like Lao Tzu, you know, this tremendously religious man, he is at a place where he is non-judgmental. That is, there is no bad. And he can say, even though I go to the depths of hell, thou art there. There is nothing evil in the world for him. Which also, and we must not lose sight of this, means, it also means that there is no extraordinarily good either. You wipe out one, you wipe out the other. You cannot have a good life without having something bad in it. And you cannot have a good bad life without having something good in it. If you want to wipe out one, take them both out. The witness. Now, Lao Tzu is at a place where he is the witness. He is the witness. He's no longer looking for the witness. Oh, there's something in me that witnesses everything, and I've got to watch it. No, he is already that, you see. So as the witness, there's no judgment as to good and evil. This witness has no discrimination. You know, so whatever happens is right. To the witness. I mean, it just is. It's not right and isn't wrong. It's just the way it is. The witness is not involved. He's just witnessing. You know? You know, you stand here, this thing's pretty solid. And I stand here and I look at it, so I'm a witness to it. Is it good? Is it bad? It is neither. Hmm? As long as I remain the witness, if I fall against it, somebody shoves me and I fall against it, oh, you bad thing, you hurt me. Which is what we usually do, huh? Now, but with this witness, and we all have it. We all have this witness inside of ourselves. What is that? What is it? Ordinarily, when we look at the events that occur, the way we look, our viewpoint, well, what gives me happiness is all right. Sure. See? And that which brings me pain or sorrow or sadness or anything like that, that's not all right. As long as I suffer, what can be right? No, it can't be. And I suffer because I want. Regardless of what it is that I want, you can want all kinds of things, but as long as you want, you're wanting. It is this desiring, it is this wanting that's the trap. Whenever we say, oh, this is good and that is bad, we betray our expectations. And a witness does not expect, it witnesses. We are held in this discrimination, in judgment, in purpose, and in ego, not so Lao Tzu. No, for him it was non-discrimination, non-judgment, non-purpose, and non-ego, the Tao. The way it is. So, okay, we're back to, usually when a person says, everything's all right, it's a form of a consolation. And if you will listen, you will see, you will hear this, that there's not much conviction in his words. Oh, it's all right. Sometimes it's stronger than that, but it's okay. Oh, it's okay. See? He's even trying to convince himself that it's okay in this situation. See, so we can say it out loud. But this disillusionment, this kind of a sadness and grievousness, it comes through his words if you listen, you know. It is a kind of a way of accepting defeat. Everything's all right, really. I can't do anything about the situation, so I guess things are as they should be. But golly gee, you know, couldn't it have turned out a little different? Just a little different, huh? Slanted a little more my way. But it didn't, so we have a tendency to wrap this false contentment around ourselves. And sometimes it seems like we are being beaten at from all directions, from all sides, and we never seem to get what we want. It just never seems to get what we want. Our hopes and our aspirations are all crumbling before us, you know, and we seem somehow to be losers through and through. There's a song like that, isn't there? Winners through and through. It's a college rah-rah song. But anyway, losers through and through, and we say, that's bah-bah, black sheep. Sure, that's the drinking song from the... Whiff and poof song, that's right. Anyway, we're poor little sheep who have gone astray. Ba, ba, ba. Oh, yeah, my doll may be here. Yeah, and then we say, anyway, finally, things are as they should be. It's like the fox in the fable. You know, If you're faced with a situation, you know, where it seems to be this way, you know, that it's sour grapes, you know. How about instead of saying sour grapes, you look at this thing that you wanted. What is this thing that you wanted? Was it even attainable? You know, women today, they go out and they get their hair dyed and they get their hair curled and they get their faces lifted and they get the whole body lifted. Do that too, you know. But it doesn't make them 20 again. They're still 55. Huh? What are you going to do about that? There's not a thing you can do about that. Not a thing. So how about looking at what you want? Is it what you want really attainable if you really worked hard at it, or is it pie in the sky? If it's pie in the sky, you're never going to get it, no matter what you do. You're hoping for something to happen that can never be. I can never be 20 again. It can never be. Of course, I could live to be 140. 50 wouldn't be so bad. Well, they're saying, you know, that's it's going to be. Anyway, if we have this wanting of something that is not attainable, we will always be the fox. But the grapes for him were just simply not attainable. He's, you know, in a fox stage, and he doesn't know that he can go get a ladder and climb up on the ladder and get the grapes that way, because he doesn't know. The grapes are simply unattainable. So, yeah, and you all know the thing, the story, the fable, you know, about this fox. He tries to reach this bunch of grapes, but he couldn't jump high enough. So, and he finally had to give up when he was worn to a frazzle, and he limped home, and here's all the other foxes, you know, waiting for him, because he'd been bragging about these grapes he was going to eat. And so they looking at him, wow, how were they, you know? Oh, they were too sour to eat. Then this fox sits there and begins to think about this situation. He really wants those grapes. And he's not satisfied with his consolation. They were sour. You know. So he joined a gym. With a trampoline they had yet, so he could improve his jumping. And he worked at aerobics. And he lifted weights. And he took vitamins and tonics to improve his stamina. He ran, and he jogged, and he swam, and he was one healthy fox. Yeah? And then off he went again to the vineyard. And in one jump, like so easy, he got those grapes. And then he went off with them to one side so he could quietly enjoy them. And what do you think? They were sour. Now, he couldn't go back to the foxes, other foxes, and say that again. No, 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 no. So he went back and told everyone that the grapes were delicious. They had become so sweet. Yeah. The ego fulfills itself by any means. Deceiving oneself doesn't enter the picture in any manner, shape, or form. You know, just so that ego gets what it wants. If I can't reach the grapes, they're sour. If I can reach them and they turn out to be sour, I say they're sweet. Yeah. Why else did I do all this gymnastics, all this mental and emotional and physical work? I wasted my time. Oh, no, the grapes were sweet. So little by little, you know, we learn to watch ourselves. See, both sides here now were consolations. Deceiving consolations, because you finally come to believe what you're saying. I have watched this in people. You tell them something, and the minute they repeat it, they don't even remember they got it from you. They repeat it on the telephone or to another person or whatever, and it comes out of their mouth, It's theirs, and it's the truth. It's incredible. See, this very thing that you don't want is exactly what you do. Like St. Paul, you deceive yourself. If you're unhappy, then by God, be unhappy until you wear it out. You don't have to run from it. Just, you know, if you can slide back into being a witness, you won't even know you're unhappy. But if you're unhappy, be unhappy. Just don't lie to yourself. Don't deceive yourself. Yourself above all people. Don't deceive yourself. The unhappiness that you have got at this moment isn't going to last forever. It's not going to last your whole lifetime. See? And also remember, while you have it, don't make everybody else around you miserable also. Your unhappiness is your unhappiness. You keep it to yourself. Don't try giving it away. It doesn't work. But the unhappiness, if you look at it, is very thin. You can wear it out. Something will rise in you, and it will replace the unhappiness. So you let it come, and you let it go. Don't try to hang on it when it's all worn out. People do, you know. It's a comfort zone. So, in all of the coming and in all of the going, always strive to be this witness until finally you are. Nor, and then with this unhappiness bit, do not assume the pose of the rugged individual. Oh, I can stand anything. I can go through anything. I'm a strong, rugged individual. I'm capable of coping with anything, of dealing with anything. It's this blustering macho. Born in this country of the U.S. of A. Yeah, we are the rugged individuals, And we glum onto this thing. It helps us cope. We have this stance. This is the land of the individuals. As an individual, I have got my rights, and don't you step on my rights. Well, it's true, But let's look at this word, individual. It's one. Undivided. A very meaningful word. Carl Jung, he used it considerably. The individual. The true self. Not the ego self. Ego self is a function. It isn't a self at all. The ego self is involved with the desires, with the greed, and with jealousy, and with selfishness, and with position, and with having, and with not having, and the consolation. That's who you're consoling, And on and on and on and on. But the self stands alone. And it is this, it is what is meant, this aloneness, by the biblical phrase, come ye out from among them, and be ye therefore separate. The ye is the individual self. Non-attached, not involved. There is in the person, the individual. There is in the person. Whether you view a person, yourself, let us say, as twofold, so there's body and spirit. People look at themselves this way, and they look at others this way, body, spirit, Then there's a threefold way of looking at a person. It's body, soul, and spirit. Then we have a fourfold way of looking at it. So we've got body, soul, mind, and spirit. And then there's a sevenfold. You know, the theosophists look at a body, a person this way, so that there's a lower quaternary, you know, which is the personality. It's a classification of realms, you know, which represent the factors of this personality. So that some people have undaunted courage, and some people have great intellect, you know, and there's emotions. It's all in this lower quaternary. And if you look at, in the Bible, the book of Ezekiel, he symbolizes it with these four animals, which is carried on further again in the book of Revelations. And then anyway, so we got this lower quaternary, and then we have the higher triad of Atma, Buddhi, Manas. So that there's seven. This is sevenfold way of looking at a person. And then there is a ninefold path. That's Plotinus in his Neoplatonism. The new Plato. Then there is a 12-fold path. And then there is a 22-fold path, which is the path of the Kabbalists. Then there is a 32-fold path. And then there is a 49-fold path, which Moses is supposed to have completed. Ways, folds, paths, however you want to call them. We have a plenty, and you take your choice, whatever you want. And then we can simplify this tremendously by saying, well, there's the one and the many, which are not two. Right? Yeah. Now, and now this Lao Tzu, the witness, the individual of Lao Tzu. So there's neither good nor evil. And this also is the essence of Zen. No holy, no foolish. Now, I'm surely when we're sitting in for meditation doing our Zazen, you know, we don't think about becoming a saint. I think that's been drummed out of you. If not, why, let me know. If it's not drummed out of you, I'll fix it. Because you know a saint, huh? Oh, such kindliness, such goodness, and such a cover-up. Yeah. Nor do we, during a period of meditation, try to project ourselves beyond time and space. No. You stay with yourself. Everything you've ever wanted is right there with you now. You know, as they say, at this very moment, nothing is lacking. All you have to do is penetrate into yourself and find it. Yeah. Just do not make the attempt to put life into a box. Let it flow. If you're going to put it in a box, you will miss. Now, in this story of the legend or the myth of Bodhidharma coming to China, you know, it took him 9 years to go from India to China. A lot of the time was spent on the water, in a boat. And then, of course, when he got there, Buddhism had preceded him, of course, so that the emperor had built temples, and now he's out here to welcome Bodhidharma, and he's got this tremendous question as to what is the most holy truth? Well, we don't know what language Bodhidharma spoke, but they tell the story, and but the words that are used, of course, are Japanese. So we have Kakunen Musho. This is what Bodhidharma replied. empty, and the Musho is complete beyond. Complete emptiness, a transcendent emptiness, where in that there is not anything. There is no floor, and there's no ceiling, and no roof, no beneath, no above, no wind, no breeze, no south, east, west, or north, none of that. No rugs, no pillars, no good, no evil, no hate, no love. Pure sky, pure sky. Cloudless, not a cloud in it. Immense, infinite. There's no point of contact. Transcending. Beyond the Buddha. Beyond the demons of holiness. Beyond piety. Beyond righteousness. Beyond consolation. Beyond the mountain. Beyond illusions. Beyond right and beyond left. Beyond Christianity and beyond Buddhism, the ultimate truth. Beyond all attachment, beyond all involvement. To perceive it, you must cut off all traces. During your zazen, during the meditation, you cut off all involvement. All judgment, all discrimination, all purpose, all ego. Difficult, huh? Yeah. Now, this process of sitting for meditation, you know, this zazen, the understanding one is seeking does not come at the end of some very carefully thought out analytical process. You throw all that to the wind. Instead of that, it is a synthetic, an intuitive, direct perception of this that is called ku. K-U, ku. In this ku, we have what is called the noetic quality. And from that position, from that place, ku, phenomena can be understood. From that point, from the noesis, you know, we see that all existences are in movement. All sentient beings, all so-called objects, are governed by the same eternal law. Which simply is, there is birth, there is growth, there is decay, and there is death, or extinction. And it happens to all of it. All of it. I don't care if it's a leaf on a tree, that lasts for one summer, or to the mountain that lasts for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, but eventually its end comes also. That is the law. Our birth moves to our death. So why do we fear it? Nothing is more natural than just that. That is the law. The body changes constantly. It grows, is transformed, and so also the mind. There is no lasting, substantial entity to the ego. All is movement. Now, within all of this movement, part of this movement is the law of interdependence. everything depends on everything else. And this law of interdependence maintains our relationships. And it keeps interactions in a perfect state of balance. From the atoms in the water to the atoms in the body to the galaxies, everything is governed by this law. You know, and then comes that little question, you know, if I sneeze, what happens to the lion in Africa? He is affected by my sneezing. We are interdependent. We are interdependent with everything. There is no way of getting away from that. Yeah? All the threads, you know, Indra's net, they speak of it as threads. And where the threads come together, there is like a little mirror, little light, you know. But the threads come together, certain ones at certain times, and there's a relationship or an event. But the thing from it, the effect of it goes through all the threads everywhere. They're all together, tied. Relationships coming together and parting. Relationships coming together and parting. Relationships coming together and parting. And everything is interrelated. Everything depends on everything else. And we heard a new name for that the other day. It's called N. Interdependency, the avatamsaka. It has to do with conditions. The conditions are right, the threads will be tied. The conditions are not right, the threads do not come together. Something else happens. Simple, terribly complicated. But that's how we live, and we don't know it. Now this word, this little syllable, ku, empty. But from this emptiness comes movement. And they call the movement the shadows of ku. It's this motion is the phenomenal aspect of ku, for ku itself is a noumenal aspect. It's empty. See, it's that which transcends the extremes or the polarities. This is Nagarjuna's middle way. Now, we hear it all the time, our phenomenal world is a dualistic world. We live in polar opposites. And we're always trying to make these opposites come together. But the whole phenomenal world starts with ku and ends with ku. Comes from there, these shadows, and then returns. You know, when we sit, you know, for meditation, we have this chant, you know. Ku sokoze shiki shiki sokoze ku. We chant it all the time, yeah. And so we have ku, from whence these motions originate. And we have shiki, which is the motion, or the temporary. See, the momentary. It's constantly moving. It is power in manifestation, shiki. Now, power in manifestation. And then ku is the non-manifested power. Into this emotion, each and everything is assembled, as it were, you know, in this chain of interdependence. One thing comes out of another. See? So every phenomenon, every shiki, does not exist in isolation. In the beginning, all is ku, And then we have all the existences, which are the manifestations of this law of interdependence. Ku has the meaning, amongst other things, empty. But that's not all of it either, huh? It should also be translated as the totality of the cosmos. So that the true nature of, finally we come to, the true nature of this ku, this little syllable, is neither existence nor non-existence. Yeah. All things change. Out of this ku, out of this emptiness, out of this totality, in a phenomena, on board. And in the end, everything returns to this zero. In the Hanyaharamita Shingyo, which we chant, huh? The sutra, it states that in the realm of ku, nothing grows and nothing decreases. It is all mushin, or no mind. And now, in observing yourself, which is something that I am forever after, huh? Observe yourself, watch yourself, remember yourself, yourself. Just find out what you're doing. Look at your thinking, observe your feelings, observe yourself. I mean, in observing, in watching, I mean more than you're going to walk down the street and all you see is yellow rose that you hadn't seen before. I wonder how long that's been blooming there. No, observe yourself. When you sit for meditation, do you observe yourself? If you do observe yourself, you will see there is something that moves from thought to thought, as it were. There's thought is here, and then another thought is here, and it's as if you've moved from one thought to another thought. See? Or you move from no thought to thought. I mean, you were sitting so nice with no thought, and all of a sudden you have a, I'm thinking, huh? I have a thought. Or you move from no thought to thought, or thought to no thought, or no thought to no thought. Now, to and fro, through all this thinking, this whole thinking process, that you're sitting there and observing as you're doing zazen, somewhere in that motion of the to and fro, back and forth, you pass through this ku. Are you observing it? Let me, Well, we like to think so. How many times have you actually observed this zero, this ku, when you sit going back and forth in your thinking? You sit. Some of you sit every day. So you're sitting. What are you observing? Not much. Truth be told. Are you observing the interdependency of everything that's going on inside of you? Do you observe this? How one thought leads to another thought, how one feeling leads to another feeling, and you wouldn't have this feeling unless you had this thinking, and you wouldn't have this thinking unless you had this feeling, etc., of which all of which you wouldn't have if you didn't have a body. Right? Yeah. Are you observing all the interrelationships in yourself? And they can be manifold. You're sitting to become very aware of relativity. And yet it seems to me somehow that people sit, then they want to get rid of existence. Yeah. Look at the relativity. Look at the relations in your existence. Look at the interdependencies with all other existences, even your job or your schooling or whatever it is you do, it's all interdependent in a society. Yeah. All phenomena are relative, and they depend on all other phenomena. Ku zoko ze shiki, shiki zoko ze ku. We, the witness. We, the witness, are beyond difference and sameness. We, as sentient beings, here, but also transcending thought and no thought, witnessing. If you look at this, you can see this ku and shiki, you know. You look at them both. Don't try to shut one out. Look at them both. Yeah. One transforms into the other, and the other transforms back into the one. And the whole of the Hanya Haramita Shingyo Sutra revolves around this. This is the sutra, they call it, of great wisdom. Revolves around this transforming. If you concentrate, and I mean really concentrate, and this is tiring. If you concentrate in your zazen, and let us say you do it for an hour a day, every day, then you can plunge into the phenomena, and you can merge with ku. See? And you can use that wisdom in your everyday life. So that zazen becomes the helm and the steering wheel of every moment of your life. You will learn great and wonderful things if you really do zazen, and not just make a kind of a gesture at it, but to really do it. See? And in the midst of this, of course, we all have our personalities to deal with. Yeah. We are all at the same time these personalities. At the same time, we are all the witness. You know, it's a neat little thing. If I have here, let us say there were 100 people sitting here, and if I had in my hand 100 pieces of paper that were blank, see, there's no difference, they're all cut the same size, and you know, and deal them out, blank pieces of paper, to 100 people. And I say to all of you, you draw a picture on this piece of paper of a person. And so you all sit and draw the same thing, a person. Not one will be the same with the other. Not one out of 100, you see? So that each piece of paper becomes different than the other 99. This piece of paper over here painted by Rembrandt, you know, maybe worth $1,000, maybe more. The little one that I make, they wouldn't even accept as waste paper, huh? Yeah. All the paper, equal as long as it was blank. But the minute we stamp our uniqueness on that piece of paper, our personality or our individuality, the whole value changes. Right? Sure. Personality. Time and situation. We can see this. And mentally, we can understand some of it. But what about existence itself? What about existence? We are all dressed in outer clothing. And this outer clothing goes very deep. Outer clothing, you know, Jesus and Buddha and Krishna and Zoroaster, you know, you go down the whole list, you know. All dressed in outer clothing. But when a person becomes an individual, a being, rather than just always becoming something, then that which is hidden as individual begins to shine through. So do not think of existence as the outer clothing, your feelings and so on. And of course, I realize it's very easy to say and very difficult to do. But go beyond the clothes and the masks and see what is hidden, this image of God. C.S. Lewis, he's written, quite a number of books. And in one of his letters to a friend, he said, "There is only one creator, and we merely mix the elements he gives us." Which somebody said was a statement that was less simple than it seems. I mean, you know, mere mixing. It shows us our place, this mixing, you know, in this process. Elements among elements, we here shape and order, categorize and define. And in doing so, at the same time, we are being defined and shaped and ordered by what we are doing with the mixing. See, so the old saying, you know, the potter molding the receptive clay, which is yourself. Which we don't realize at the time. We are being molded by what we do. So finally, you know, we come down to this thing, this word creative, created. When applied to our endeavors, we are standing under a tremendous mystery. From time to time, that mystery, sort of as if it were a sun shining in the sky, seems to send down to our heads, one head or another, you know, this sudden shaft of light. By grace, one feels, rather than deserving, by grace. For it always comes as something given free. Maybe unexpected, and it is somehow beyond explanation, and yet, you know, somehow, this unknown mystery, this cool chi, this movement, and this rest, somehow we know it. Way inside, we know it. Doesn't take away the mystery, but we know it. Okay?
If you find Lola's talks valuable, more will be posted in weeks to come.